The Babylon Project podcast was our last best hope for reruns. It failed. But in the year of the Shadow War, it became something greater. Our last best hope for fandom. The year is 2017. The place, the Babylon Project podcast.
This is Maggie Egan, your ISN news anchor, and you're listening to the Babylon Project podcast. Thanks for listening.
Good evening, or good day, or good morning, or whatever it is in your time zone when you're listening to us, but welcome to the Babylon Project podcast. Once again, this is Rollo Ibarra, joined by Jim Arrowood and J.P. Harvey on the anniversary run-through of Babylon 5.
Uh-huh.
How are you doing tonight, gentlemen?
I'm doing well.
I'm well also. Excited about tonight's episode.
Yes. Busier than heck.
Walkabout, right?
Yes.
Walkabout.
Walkabout.
Go on walkabout.
Oh, you don't want me trying to do accents.
You got a knife? I got a knife. Let's go on walkabout. Shades of Crocodile Dundee.
Lost? No, we're not talking Lost. We're talking Babylon 5.
Right.
Okay. We'd have to, if we were doing Lost Walkabout, we'd have to be pulling Wayne Anderson in for it.
Ah, and you'd be losing me, because I have never watched any of it.
It's good for one watch through.
Oh, I'm sure it is. One day I'll get around to it. I'll retire here and, oh, I don't know.
But we are not the Lost Casting Podcast. That's Wayne okay. And Metal Dan.
You keep stealing my line. What's with you?
Ha! I don't know. I'm in a cuckoo mood today. It's going to be a fun one for me. Maybe not for you.
Could be caffeinated.
It's going to be amusing for me.
All right.
Well, let's go ahead and give it back to you. What episode are we talking about tonight, Jim?
Well, as we said, it's a Walkabout 318, third season, 18th episode. Some interesting things going on in this episode.
Yeah.
And some things that I'm not really happy about. But we'll get into that in a little bit. Let's just say I would subtitle this one Babylon 5 the Musical.
Which of course means it's a Franklin focused episode. Now hang on though. We get Marcus going a few episodes. You could have called it almost Babylon 5 the Musical if they had broken to some song Camelot.
Oh, no. No. You are not allowed to sing.
Okay, well, then you'll have to do Richard Harris for me.
Well, I'll tell you what. Troy, take that out, please.
Yeah, don't ever say Richard Harris again.
What's wrong with Richard Harris?
Oh, the singing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. No, actually, and I know this is off the subject again, but one of my favorite songs of all time was performed by Richard Harris. Mm. Not the greatest performance of all time, but MacArthur Park by Richard Harris was just awesome in my mind.
I actually got to see him perform Camelot once. St. Louis. What?
That's awesome.
Yeah. St. Louis Municipal Opera. The stage is literally the size of a football field.
Oh, I believe it.
They have, you know, it's a huge outdoor amphitheater stage.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest problem they have staging on it is the thing is so darn big. I mean, the pit orchestra isn't a partial orchestra. The pit is so big, they have a full-size symphony buried in it.
Ah. Well, I'll tell you what. Camelot is my favorite musical of all time, but this is not the Camelot podcast. This is the Babylon 5 podcast.
You had to get it in.
We're talking about Walkabout. Yes, of course.
Well, why don't you tell us about Walkabout, sir?
All right, coming right up.
Archive. Access. Initiated.
Wanting to test out the theory that the shadows can be affected by telepaths, Sheridan recruits Lita to accompany him on the White Star. They take the ship into hyperspace near an area where other shadow attacks have taken place. The White Star is accompanied by a Minbari war cruiser with three telepaths aboard just in case Lita isn't strong enough. They were also to be accompanied by a Narn ship, but the captain of that vessel decides that the Narn cannot risk further resources with their fleet so depleted. When a shadow attack occurs, Sheridan takes the White Star out of hyperspace. Lita scans the shadow and discovers that the shadows are responsible for the death of Kosh. While Lita uses her powers to hold the shadow at bay, the White Star destroys it, but it manages to get a distress signal out, bringing four more shadows on the scene. Lita is weakened from the first encounter and is unable to hold any of the shadows off. The Minbari telepaths can only hold off three of the shadow vessels. Garibaldi convinces Jakar to assert his authority and order the Narn heavy cruiser to help with the fighting, along with other ships from the League of Non-Aligned Worlds. The shadows realize they cannot win and retreat. Dr. Franklin has resigned his position on Babylon 5 and goes on Walkabout. The purpose of this is so that he can figure out who he is when he isn't being a doctor. When Franklin walks into a club, he sees a singer on the stage that he takes an interest in. After she finishes her set, she joins Franklin at his table and introduces herself as Kaelin. And she also appears to be quite interested in him. They spend the night together, and she asks him to get her a drug called Metazine. Assuming she is an addict, Franklin refuses. So while he sleeps, Kaelin steals his credit chip and obtains the Metazine herself. After she is examined, Franklin is told that she has a terminal disease and that she needs the Metazine to fight the pain that comes with her condition. Franklin tells the med lab staff to give her whatever she needs and continues his walkabout. A new Vorlon ambassador arrives on the station, introducing himself as Kosh. The new Kosh suspects that there is a part of the previous ambassador residing within someone on the station. Kosh brutally probes Lita for information, but she explains that she was not there when Kosh was killed. Later, when Sheridan speaks to Lita, she hears Kosh's voice come from him and suspects that some part of Kosh is within him, but she doesn't report this to anyone. Well, there it is.
There it is.
There it is.
Yes.
Character files opened.
Well, guest cast. This is one of those hard ones where it's like, okay, well, most of the guest cast is hardly guest. They go from everything from recurring, you know, at least in season three, recurring soon to be, well, technically regulars, to sort of reoccurring characters. Mm-hmm. We'll save the real guest cast person for last. So go ahead. Who have we got, sir?
Okay, we have Erica Gimple as Kaelin. Her only appearance on Babylon 5 and the only other genre show that I could find that she was on is Roswell.
Does Veronica Mars count?
I never saw Veronica Mars.
And I know she was recurring on ER, of course.
Ah.
And The Profiler.
Yeah.
But But since we've talked musicals, you can't bring up Erica Gemple without bringing up what she's most famous for, where she became known as a triple threat.
Okay. Enlighten me.
Coco. Fame.
Oh.
The series, not the movie.
Yeah, I avoided both of those like the plague. No, I am, don't misunderstand me. I like Camelot, but I'm not into musicals. All right, so anyway, moving right along.
Well, go for it.
Okay, Jennifer Balgobin, or Balgobin, as Dr. Hobbs, returns for her second of three appearances on Babylon 5, and we've talked about her before.
Yep.
Robin Sachs as Nicol. This is his fourth of five appearances on Babylon 5. He appeared earlier as Hedren and Natak, and is also on In the Beginning as a Minbari named Copeland. And then we've talked about him in the past also.
Right.
And then, of course, our big heavy hitter for the night is Patricia Tallman as Lita Alexander. And then one other cast member that is worth noting is that Arbright Chamberlain returns as the new Vorlon ambassador. Wow, I'm having a real tough time putting words together tonight.
Sing him.
Returns as the new Vorlon. Stop it. The new Vorlon ambassador, also named Kosh. So when he says they're all named Kosh, since he plays all the Vorlons, I guess they are all Kosh, right?
That works.
But do you know the Vorlon's actual name?
Okay. Enlighten me again.
Olkesh.
Eh?
I didn't know.
I remember that coming from, I thought it was one of the books. I think it might have been the Sinclair,
the Peter Marcus David book.
Yeah.
Oh.
No, not the Peter David book. The one written by Straczynski's ex-wife.
Oh, okay. I was going to say Dream in the City of Sorrows, but...
That.
Is that the one?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. You always forget that one.
I don't know why I can't remember that title. Peter David did the Centauri trilogy.
Okay. Now I got it.
So, of course, they could all be Kosh. I mean, we didn't see a body, did we? Never assume anyone's dead until you see the body, right?
Well, I'll tell you what. When they launched his ship into the sun, I'm pretty sure he didn't survive that.
Well, his encounter suit was in there. They found that.
His things, right? Put his things on the ship.
His things.
Okay, now we're picking myths.
Yeah, maybe he found new things.
Oh, gosh.
Hey, foreshadowing.
Yes.
Oh, sorry, guys. It's been one of those days.
It's going to be one of those nights, too.
Busy weeks make for punchy podcasters.
Yeah.
Initiating plot analysis.
Londo's a bit cranky.
Yeah.
Yeah, apparently he's upset about a ship parked outside of Bab 5.
Yeah, a huge Narn vessel.
Just a heavy cruiser? Come on. You've got Garibaldi's response. You gotta love it. Go ahead and play it.
A non-heavy cruiser? This is intolerable! By treaty, all non-warships will be turned over to Centauri forces.
Sorry, we didn't sign that treaty. You got a problem? Call Earth. If they hadn't forced us to break away, we wouldn't need a mutual protection agreement. That means we take every ship we can get.
And what guarantees will you give me that the cruiser will not open fire on a Centauri vessel as it approaches Babylon 5,
It's the same guarantee I gave when I said that none of the other Narns would break into your quarters in the middle of the night and slit your throat.
Mr. Garibaldi, you have never given me that promise.
You're right. Sleep tight.
Love it.
Oh, yeah.
What a way to start the show.
Yeah.
And it just gets better from there. Like you said, the big player, Lita, she's back.
Yeah.
Looking for Franklin.
But he's not to be found.
Yeah, in particular, she's... Well, understandably, I guess, rather upset about Kosh.
Mm-hmm.
Wanting to know if anyone was around when he died, which is a little odd.
Well, yeah.
He is a little reclusive.
Well, as Vorlons tend to be, but we know that Leda and him have a relationship of some sort.
Right.
And
the beams of light.
Yeah. Did you notice she almost spilled the beans?
Hmm.
She said, Kosh and I were, and then she brought it back and said, Kosh and I were something else, doing something else. But it sounded like she was just about to spill the beans on what their exact relationship was.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. She says I was his assistant, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Kosh and I were, and then she says, "Well, I was his assistant."
Mm-hmm. That's
or
how
aide
it went.
Or something like that. But
yeah.
Yep. Well, we're getting the actual episode set up after this. According to Mike, the captain wants the War Council convened because he's got a plan.
Mm-hmm.
But in this conversation, in Mike's conversation, that is, with Susan, he can't find the captain anywhere. It turns out he went for a walk.
Yeah, he's on walkabout.
Yeah, real walkabout.
It looks like about a half a mile from the the main viewing port of the station.
Literally.
Yeah. You know, the neat thing about that scene is when he's out there on that arm, it really shows just how big that station is.
5 miles long.
Oh, yeah. And but I'll tell you what, my goodness.
And what's
that thing is.
Yeah, I don't know, remember what the diameter was, but that's, I've got a town. I mean, Edwardsville is something along that lines end to end. So you're it's even more when you wrap it in a circle.
Yeah.
Quarter of a million people.
Yeah. Did you notice the plot hole?
Huh?
Did you notice the plot hole?
Which?
While Sheridan is standing out there, his spacesuit is kind of limp around him.
Yeah,
it should be filled with air and somewhat ballooned out, but it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
So that was something that got missed. But at any rate,
yeah.
So he's out there a speck on the 5 mile world.
Yeah,
and somebody joins him. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, a couple of somebodies apparently. I just want to know, what did the Vorlon ship say? Hi there.
Well, that's easy. Which way to the docking bay?
I'm going to read Joe Straczynski's comment on that,
okay.
Because off the Lurker's Guide, there's a question for him. Will we ever find out what was written on the side of Kosh's ship? And Straczynski's answer was, what? Do I look like someone who can speak Vorlon? Oh, sure, a few words. Mainly, where's the bathroom and what's that smell? But to translate something like that, psh, please. In parentheses, answer, probably not.
It would have been funny if he would have just said, no.
The Vorlon answer.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, gosh. And we cut to, and actually all these different threads are part of the same story arc, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
We cut to Jakar, who is serving Breen, or Swedish meatballs.
Yeah.
Which is, I guess, sort of the Babylon 5 equivalent of gin and tonics.
Yeah.
I think I'd rather have the gin and tonic.
Come on, Orbital Sword, gin and tonic, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Oh, okay.
Oh, good heavens.
Swedish meatballs and gin and tonic. I'll take the meatballs. You can have the gin and tonic there, JP.
Yeah.
Waste not, want not. We'll take it. We'll take care of all of it.
Yeah.
Right.
I love the way Jakar says, it seems that every sentient race has its own version of these.
Mm-hmm. That's almost a quote from the Hitchhiker's Guide, the actual guide itself.
Uh-huh. And now I remember that.
But we find out some interesting stuff about the Narn. Apparently, there's still about 10 capital ships left. There's some rebuilding happening, though. It's like they're scrapping together more ships from the remains of the others somewhere. But Jakar, at this point, is really focused on Babylon 5.
Well, yeah, and it would also appear here that he has learned patience. Because rather than encouraging an all-out attack with what's left, he tells him, no, we're not going to attack. We're going to wait.
Yeah.
While the fleet's rebuilt, and we're going to take care of this place.
Right, and that's the other important piece of what he's learned. It's not just Narn, 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 Narn. It's a focus on Babylon 5. This is the place that's important.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. We already know Franklin's missing. Mike's looking into it.
Mm-hmm.
And we meet the new Vorlon. Now, question for you guys. Is it just me, or is this Vorlon, shall we say, a bit more sinister looking?
Yeah, I don't know what it was about his suit, but I had the same impression.
Well, you know, he is this one looks definitely more sinister, and the suit, the encounter suit, looks like it's been streamlined somewhat.
Right.
And it has more angular features to it, whereas Kasha's was more round and larger in the shoulders, and it looked more cumbersome than this new Vorlon.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I wonder if part of it's the horns on the headpiece.
Oh, I'm sure that has a lot to do with it, too.
It definitely makes it, that with the color, definitely makes it look a little more demonic.
Yeah. Well, see, the first Kosh Prime, I don't know. Mm-hmm. The first Kosh, to me, looked like he was wearing a shower curtain with a shower curtain rod draped over, you know, hanging on his shoulders and a shower curtain hanging on him. This one doesn't look that way. He looks leaner and meaner.
This one's in armor.
Definitely meaner.
Yeah.
Definitely on the meaner side.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you think back, though, and I guess the end of our last episode, we did kind of see them standing together because it was Kosh and this one, I believe, side by side, surrounding Valen.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe in one of the future episodes with Delenn, we'll see the two of them together again. So,
yeah.
Anyway, he's about as talkative as any Vorlon. In fact, I kind of like that comment from Susan. Yep, he's a Vorlon, all right. We are all Kosh. I think you had mentioned that one already.
Yeah. And, okay, I don't understand why we're all Kosh, but, you know, maybe that'll come up later.
Guess it has something to do with the mushrooms they put on their salads or something.
Ooh. Okay, moving
on. All right. Moving on, Franklin is looking a little bit scruffy.
We find lost Dr. Franklin. There he is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's good to know Ziplocs are still around in the 23rd century.
Yeah. And you know, you gotta like Mike. You just gotta love Garibaldi because he is the eternal pragmatist. And I snagged a very short clip to show that.
What the hell are you doing?
Well, it's a long story.
Why is everything around here a long story? Why isn't anything ever a short story, a paragraph? Look, just give me the short version, okay?
All right. Walkabout.
So, I love it. Just tell me what's going on. Don't give me this long story stuff.
Yep. Which, if you were a Lost fan or if you know something about Australia, you get. Garibaldi, not being either of those, ends up pushing for the longer version. The short of it is, you go walking until you meet yourself and have a conversation.
Yeah, well, he said a long conversation. So.
And yeah, Mike looks a little askance at that, which I don't blame him, but.
Yeah.
So I guess my comment from, I guess three episodes or so ago now. I'm going to just leave it, and I'm pretty sure JP might. Was it JP that disagreed with me, or was it you? I don't remember which. Yeah, Franklin approach, run from the problem.
Yeah, I remember the conversation. I don't remember agreements or disagreements, right, but run from the problem.
Yeah.
Well, if the problem is with himself, and I think that was in reference, if I recall, to his use of stims
right.
as running from his problems. The use of stims, he was more running towards his problems. You know, I wonder if he didn't feel he was being effective as a doctor. I mean, think back to the way he treated Dr. Hobbs in that first mm-hmm. encounter they had, and I mean, he was horrible, and he was uncivil. He was uncivil. He was rude, and he was out of line.
He was downright abusive.
Yeah. So he knew the score, and mm-hmm. is he running from that? No, I don't see it that way personally. It's more like he's just trying to remember what it is to be human.
Well, on the point of the walkabout, right? I forget if it was stated in the show or not, but walking, you know, you walk till you meet yourself, which we said, and then in his case is, who is he when he's not a doctor? You know, who is he? And,
exactly. Yeah, he's so lost
his running from the stims, or running from the burden he's become to other people, may not be so much that as remove himself from all those circumstances and find himself.
Yeah, that's kind of the line I was thinking on.
Yeah, and if I'm sounding harsh on Franklin, it's not that I don't get where he's coming. I mean, obviously, both of you gentlemen know what my earlier part of this year was like.
Yeah.
It's more of and I definitely get what you guys are talking about there, but is there's a difference between quitting everything and taking a step back, or several steps back.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very true. He's taking a 5-mile walk.
Yeah, he's not taking any sort of steps back. He's basically just checking out. And the way he's describing it at this point so far, his goal doesn't really seem to be get himself centered and reengaged. It's just, I'm going to go away and find myself.
Well, and of course, he's not going to be any good to anybody else until he figures it out.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And there I absolutely completely agree. But the walkabout idea was borrowed from the Aborigines.
Mm-hmm.
In Australia.
Yeah. All he needed was a didgeridoo, and he'd have been just perfect.
Well, moving on, while Kosh was busy being killed, he somehow managed to leave a message on the wall.
Yeah, well, more like an image, really.
Though the other Vorlons seemed to understand it quite well.
Well, I mean,
in fact, he knew to look for it.
It flashed very, very shortly, but it was obvious what it was. I mean, it was a silhouette of a human, and at least one shadow creature.
Yeah, I'm actually looking at it now. There's one to the left. There's one slightly behind the human figure. And there's one more to the right, a little further back in the distance.
Ah.
So, it's like, okay, this is what got me.
That was kind of chilling.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. And Lita catches up with Kosh, too, which is what he was typically referred as. To the fandom during the airing.
Ah.
Yeah, they have quite the conversation.
Uh-huh.
Or I guess she has a monologue mostly. But
yeah. What the heck? Is it her fault? Seriously.
Well, I don't know. She wasn't there. Maybe they felt she was supposed to be there.
She wasn't there because she was doing what her boss told her to do.
Right.
Well, it's normal for a person to second guess themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. He whatever he did, he wasn't very gentle with her either.
No.
So, speaking of Lita, continue with Lita, Sheridan catches up with her and sounds like she's got a role or some connection with this plan he's tinkering around with. And, you know, it's not just us. Lita doesn't sound all that fine to Sheridan either.
No, and she doesn't look good. She's lost in her thoughts.
Yeah. Yeah. And speaking of those thoughts, it's like she's hearing Kosh from Sheridan. I'm thinking she is.
Well, she probably is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that we'll definitely get to before this episode's over.
Yes. Powerful telepath she is.
Okay, Franklin's walkabout. So we see what looks like an EV, an electro voice. I think that almost like an electro voice mic with some glowy things on either end.
I know. Oh,
standard D drums. And I'm not sure if that was a Yamaha or an Alesis wind controller.
Oh, I didn't even look that close. My eyes were rolling in the back of my head. I was looking at my occipital region by this time.
Yeah, because yeah. Guess who finds a girl?
Yeah, and oh joy, we know where this is going.
God.
At least, finally, she's not one of his patients.
Well, yeah, I guess technically that's true. Or at least she's not one of his patients yet.
Yet.
Oh, I was so glad when this scene came to an end, not only the song, but Franklin's stare.
Now, I mean, like the song.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
I've got the little broader taste, though. So.
Don't you dare start singing.
I won't sing it. I mean,
okay.
My musical taste, I mean, at one point I'm listening to the Russian Five, and in the... And in the same breath, not long before, I don't remember if it was before or after, I'm listening to Confederate Railroad.
I just thought that the scene with the singing just went on too long. Now, of course, considering that as you say, JMS wrote the song, you know, that's great. But you know what? He was a... guilty of a bit of hypocrisy because he remember back when he jumped all over Lanier for mentioning an album title.
Yeah.
I was distracted by the fact that Franklin was drinking chocolate milk. But I guess if he's fighting an addiction, you know, he's drinking something. That's
or was it Kahlua?
Cold cappuccino.
Could have been Kahlua. Yeah. Or cappuccino.
Well, who knows what he was going to order, because that waitress just handed him what she had on the tray and walked away. And as you say, it looked like chocolate milk or maybe cold cappuccino. He didn't drink any of it. He pushed it away.
Yep. Oh, well, to the interesting part of the episode.
Good.
Sheridan wants to test Mike's telepath theory from several episodes ago with the shadows. He's going to borrow Lita and look for a shadow vessel to attack.
Mm-hmm.
Try to jam it, try to kill it. Sounds easy.
Yeah, on paper it sounds easy.
Mm-hmm. And, well, at least, yeah.
Or simple plan, not easy.
Right.
But simple.
Simple plan, not necessarily easy. And he's not too fond of the idea of having backup for it. He wants to solo this.
Yeah. Well, understandably, he doesn't want to put anybody else in danger except the White Star, himself, the commander of the station. several Minbari pilots and technicians that are on the ship.
Lanier.
And a unique prototype.
Yeah, and Lanier. Well, fortunately, Susan shuts him down pretty handily.
That was comical. That was good.
Oh, yeah. The look on her face was incredible. It's like, hey, tough noogies, buddy. You're doing what we say.
Hey, she did what a good EO is supposed to do.
Yeah.
Save him from yourself.
And that's what they're there for, to make sure things are done relatively safely. But there's no safe part of this plan.
Well, frankly, Sheridan's being stupid anyway. When have we seen a shadow vessel alone?
Once in a while, not very often.
Yeah, it's the exception rather than the rule, and usually it involves an insane shadow vessel.
Yeah, as I recall, the last one was the one that Kefir encountered.
Mm-hmm. Well, Delenn's going to send some backup and a couple of Minbari telepaths as well, so.
Probably a good idea.
Yeah. Not just physical backup, power or force backups, but some psychic backup.
Yep.
And Franklin is still on the move, but it's not really the walkabout move.
Yeah.
Except Kaylin's moving even faster, it seems.
Oh, they're both moving, and it is sickening.
JP, we've got a love-hate relationship with Franklin here. We like the character except for his ethics with women.
Right. Frequent.
Right.
Lack of ethics with women.
Hey, but like you said, she's not a patient.
No.
For a change.
And she's actually moving faster than he is, so that's a change in itself there.
She lured him in with her wily ways.
Yes, and she has an ulterior motive.
Yep. Well, she's got a few ulterior motives. I mean, she doesn't know who he is yet.
Yet, yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So the motive for her could be, well, she could be a female Franklin.
Yeah.
So she's looking for a good time, and then she's going to discover that there might be some other advantages to being his buddy. Yeah. Or did she know? I'm not sure.
In any case, we've got a libido that'll fill a warehouse on both sides going on here.
speaking of Nikal, it seems he doesn't want to run escort. All I can say, Jakar, you wuss. Who the heck is in charge here?
Well, I don't know. JP could probably speak to this better than me, but he is the captain of that heavy cruiser.
Yeah, if Jakar's not in his chain of command, he can...
Well, actually, from what I understand from earlier, Jakar, for the Narn that are not subject to the Centauri, Jakar is the top of the command chain.
Right. And if he is, then... We're watching something go on here. Uncertainty on Jakar's part. Deference to the guy that's the tactician.
Uh-huh.
Or cowardice. I don't think we know yet what's going on with Jakar, other than he seems to want to... If he's the boss, he wants to be the boss by consensus on this one. I'm going to talk to the commander of the ship, and then we'll let you know.
Yeah.
And I... You know, I don't... totally have a problem with cowardice here. I wouldn't call it that myself. We are down to 10 ships.
Yeah, it's not a good scene.
Are we going to sacrifice one of our working best resources to, you know, to what end?
For what is appearance to be a suicide mission.
It could very well be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the setup for that was Jakar saying the only ship that could do this for you is this one. And whether it was going through his head that that's one of 10 capital ships left, or the only one with that kind of firepower, or he's I'm not going to make the decision. I mean, that is a possibility, but it didn't trouble me that he said, I've got to talk to the captain of the ship. I thought that was reasonable.
I look at
Jakar as still as an ambassador or an ambassadorial kind of guy more than a military commander. So it's a great idea, but I don't know. I got to talk to the military guy about this.
You know, JP, I think you're onto something.
Would you want to sacrifice a very valuable officer for a suicide mission that really isn't going to gain you a whole lot?
Right. Or what could be a suicide.
Well, if the mission succeeds, it's going to gain them a whole heck of a lot.
Right.
Well,
And you remember Jakar was hesitant, though, when the scene kicks off and they're talking about the plan.
Mm-hmm.
And Sheridan lays it out, and then Jakar right away says, well, there's a lot of, qualifiers there? Or, mm-hmm.
And, you know, you keep saying if, and... You know, it brings to mind a saying my dad used to have, if a bullfrog had wings, he wouldn't bump his butt when he jumped.
Yep.
Yeah. But I think, as I started to say, JP, I think, has gotten down to the correct root cause. Jakar might be, for lack of word, the head of state or for the Narn Rebellion. He might be the top of the chain of command. But he's absolutely, like JP said, still thinking like an ambassador.
Yeah, he's a civilian.
He hasn't made that mental shift yet.
Right.
But we're gonna come back to that, because he's gonna get reminded of this in just a few minutes.
Right. We're a scene or two away from the continuation of this issue.
Uh-huh. In the meantime, we've got Sheridan on his way. I promise I won't sing A Hunting We Will Go.
Thank you.
You're welcome. But I could sing Camelot.
Nope.
Not even the Monty Python version?
You sing, I'm hanging up.
We need one of those buttons like they have on radio, right? The bleep button.
Yeah, I've got one for me here. I've got a silencing button for me. I think Christmas is coming, isn't it?
Well, Sheridan's hunting, and sorry to do this, I'll keep it short, but as far as Caitlin's concerned, damn, she drinks a lot.
Yeah, I know.
Anyway, Mike is, as far as JP, going to what JP said a couple scenes away.
Yeah.
Mike's somewhat annoyed with Jakar. and it seems he's got some similar issues to what has been brought up already.
Mm-hmm.
And he explains the command to him. So if you've got that, I think that'll sum it up right there.
Yep.
Yes! Yes, Watts, come in!
I brought back your damn book.
Well, surely this can wait until...
After all, why the hell should I care what's in it if you don't?
You're not making sense.
No? What the hell is that Narn ship still doing here?
I discussed the situation with War Leader Nakal. He felt it was better to conserve our resources.
Did he? Well, how practical of him.
Oh,
No, never mind. You're right. He's right. Everybody's right. Let's just look out for ourselves. When that cruiser popped out of hyperspace, we should have done the same thing. We should have just let the Centauri take custody of it in the first place, instead of sending out our ships and our pilots to defend it.
Well, he doesn't want to go.
Of course he doesn't! It's easy to fight when you got a lot of ships to work with. The real crunch comes when you're down to almost nothing. Then you either play it safe and you probably lose it all, or you take a chance. After everything we've been through with your people, Sheridan was crazy to send our pilots out to fight for your ship. They didn't want to go. They didn't want to get blown out of the sky and leave B-5 defenses, and they sure as hell didn't want to die. But they did it because Sheridan told them to do it, and because it was right.
This time it is possible he could be wrong.
Yeah, it's possible. But you don't follow an order because you know for sure it's going to work out. You do what you're told because your CO has the moral authority that says you may not come back. But the cause is just and fair and necessary. That's why Sheridan's out there. And damn it, that's where that cruiser should be too. It's not Nicole's decision, Jakar. He doesn't see the big picture. You do. So in my book, and your book, that makes it your responsibility. Deal with it.
And one last thought to keep in mind there. Jakar was placed in command as the last of the Kari.
Mm.
So Garibaldi is absolutely right, in my opinion at least, in bringing up the moral authority argument.
I thought this was interesting because, as we talked about at the beginning, Jakar has focused on Babylon 5. And then you have you have Nikal, who appears to be focused on all of Narn. You
know, right.
We're down to 10 ships, these sorts of things. And then Garibaldi comes in and he lays out a different take on the story. And Jakar doesn't argue with him. Jakar doesn't say, I don't have the authority. Or he's being told, Nikal doesn't have the big picture, when you could have argued 10, 15 minutes ago in the episode, Nikal is the one who has the bigger picture. He's looking at the whole of the Narn military and what's left. When in fact, we get this explanation, which seems to be laid out for us as fact, as Nikal just doesn't want to go. He's using...
Not only that, though, JP, but, you know, let's remember that... the Narn also have an enemy called the Centauri.
Yes.
Right. That they have to keep in mind.
And this is what I often refer to as the wolf closest to the sled. The shadows may be the bigger problem, but the immediate problem are the Centauri. And apparently, I guess you could say, Londo, who's painfully aware of the problem of the shadows, what is he whining about at the beginning of the episode? A Narn warship.
A Narn warship.
So, you know, it's funny to see in the chaos of all of the things happening where people's minds are. One thing I'll say in Jakar's defense is taking now, based on Mike's words, that Jakar has the authority to order War Leader Nikal to do this thing. There's having authority to
As
do something.
He is last of the Kari.
There's having the authority and the understanding that you can do a thing, and it's another thing to do it. And in this case, it's possibly spending the lives of your people or your soldiers, your military. And if Jakar hasn't had to quite do this before, you could lose 1/10 of your capital fleet, and apparently the most powerful ship in the fleet. And we'll just say, a good commander. And all of that crew, okay, make the decision. And if you haven't had to do that before, he's probably... I kind of get why he might want to say, well, let me go talk to the captain about this. Or to war... I call him the captain, but War Leader Nikal. Doesn't mean Jakar's right, but here he is. This isn't academic anymore. He's got to make a decision. That's pretty tough. By the way, Mike calling this moral authority, I wouldn't have used that phrase. It doesn't change what he said. In my mind, the authority for a military commander, whether it's a person in uniform or the commander-in-chief in the form of the president, the authority to spend the lives of your troops is just your authority. It's lawful. It's not moral. People argue, you know, well, should you have done it or should you not have done it, or is war itself moral and those kinds of things. But the commander, in this case, appears to have the legal authority to turn to Jakar as something akin to a commander-in-chief, can turn to this man and say, you're going to do this. And that's not a moral decision, that's a legal decision.
It's a legal decision.
When we use moral authority in our military, that is more akin, or the way we teach it, is to a commander giving an unlawful order, and the answer is actually not what Mike said, which is you don't do this, that, or the other, you just obey. Actually, no, the moral authority exercised by a subordinate is when he's given an illegal or an immoral order, and he has the moral authority to say, I will not obey. That's probably more parsing than we need. The fact that JMS has that phrase in there, moral authority, I wouldn't have used moral authority, but it doesn't change what's happening here, which is Mike puts the heat on him to say, you're the boss. You make the decision and decide what you're going to tell your commander to do. pretty cool scene, and heavier, I think, than it kind of came across in the telling of the story in the episode. I feel bad.
I'm sitting here wishing we had an extra couple hours because the whole, obviously, moral authority, legal authority goes well beyond just the military. And
right,
as you guys know, I something of layman in philosophy. Ooh, I'd love to follow that whole conversation up, but if I even start down that path, forever will it dominate our destiny. Or at least, our
Well, we better move forward.
But it's a great scene, and I felt bad when it was all over. I felt bad in a sense for Jakar because he just found himself having to make a decision that he's probably never had to make before. Nothing like this. And then this commander, who makes great arguments verbally, appears, based on Jakar's own words, it all boils down to not it's one-tenth of the fleet, or whatever, it's he doesn't want to go. Those were Jakar's words. Mm-hmm. Well, okay, noted. And then Mike, I just love the argument. Well, you know, our guys didn't want to leave the safety of Babylon 5 to go out and defend your stuff, but they did. And
right.
So it's a fantastic scene.
You know, something you said earlier just hit me. Nicole is thinking of terms of Narn, staying and protecting Narn.
Right.
Jakar is thinking in terms of staying close and protecting Babylon 5. Sheridan, in contrast, is thinking in terms of bringing the fight to the enemy.
Right.
So I guess in some ways that's almost that's the real bigger picture.
Yeah. And none of these are really the story or the picture. All of these are the picture. All of this has to be considered.
Very true. I'm sorry, Jim, but we've got to switch back to it. after some good philosophy, we've got Franklin worrying about why this girl is ducking down below because she's a good singer.
Please, no more. Please.
Yeah. A musician who's good but can't make a good living never happens in the real world.
No, of course not. That's why there's 10 million really, really good musicians out there that can't get a gig.
Right. Or have a day job.
Yeah, really. The guy with the Pizza Hut hat.
Right. Well, she finds out he's a doctor, and she's wanting a drug called Metazine.
Yeah, she sure lit up.
Powerful narc. Yeah. And let's just leave it at that. Conversation goes real downhill real fast.
Oh, yeah.
Franklin's more or less assuming she's a druggie.
He hasn't completely lost his head.
Right.
You know, he's using some common sense here for a change.
Uh-huh. Well, back onto the more interesting stuff. let's just say Lita looks tense a bit.
Yeah.
Can you blame her?
I don't know. If I saw one of those shadow ships, I think I'd be a little tense myself.
Yeah. Well, while they're waiting, she's grilling Sheridan about Kasha's death. And, you know, she gets downright perky about his answers.
Yeah.
Having a dream about Kosh?
Well, she's getting some answers here that's leading her to answer the question of the second Kosh.
Yeah.
So
maybe she'll get out of trouble a bit.
Yeah, she's getting an inkling here.
Mm-hmm. And, oh, goody, a shadow vessel attacks.
Well, that's what they're out there for.
Yeah, can't believe I said that, but...
I can't believe you said that, too.
It was in my notes. Of course, Lita has a bit of a collapse.
Yeah.
Apparently the shadow vessels are a little tougher than she expects.
Yeah, she's pretty tough, too, because did you see that thing come to a stop?
Yeah.
You know, when she projected and that thing just kind of hesitated.
Yeah, especially when she has that flashback to Kasha's death. She's pissed.
Oh, that's the end of it right there for that shadow vessel. Yeah. I mean, she do not mess with the redhead. That's all there is to it.
Yeah.
She'll eat your soul.
Well, like you said, she knocks it to a screeching halt. And there's sort of a discontinuity here with the rest of Lita's extreme psychic events. Her eyes are bleeding in this one. And in all the other cases, they go almost shadow black.
Yeah. Well, we never really did get a close-up. So, you know, but at the same time, yeah, she's really putting out some vibes.
Mm-hmm. And like you said, it brings it to a stop, and they have to put all of their power into their weapons, but no more shadow vessel.
Yeah. And that move of having to run all that power through there almost causes a problem, mm-hmm. a big problem.
Yeah, because it's going to take, they take, and we've seen this before, taking the jump engines offline for the extra power. There's some time involved before you can spin them back up.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, there's only one shadow vessel, right?
Right. At least at this point.
So it's okay.
At this point, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Can I just say, damn, Kaylin skinny and a thief, yep. and get back to
okay,
life?
Now moving right along.
skinny thief.
That pretty much sums up the scene.
Well, but yeah, well, and but to go on with that, I mean, Franklin suspects her of being an addict, and now she is behaving as one.
Right.
So that kind of leads us to believe that Franklin is right in his assessment.
Indeed. Indeed it does.
And he's an addict, so it takes one to know one, right?
It takes one to know one. You know, that's a good point, too, actually. We'll see how that develops toward the end of this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there was only one shadow vessel, but Lita does think they may have gotten possibly, perchance, a distress call off.
Yeah, that's not good news.
Yeah, especially when it's four more shadow vessels that show up. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, the line, "We've got a problem."
Statement of the obvious.
Yeah. Hey, Houston. And, yep, running is a very good idea at this point.
Yeah.
Especially when they figure out, okay, there's three Minbari telepaths, four shadows, and an exhausted Lita. So, yeah, it's a bit of a problem.
Yeah, it's not looking good right at this point.
Because the one thing they can't do when they run is jump.
Right.
Well, and the jump engines are needing to recharge anyway. The flux capacitor was depleted.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's going to be old lettuce that'll recharge it.
Uh-uh.
But, well, hey, I guess Garibaldi paid off in his conversation, because look who came to the party.
Oh, yeah. Cavalry comes through the jump gate, or through a jump point, I should say.
Uh-huh. And for the first time, something new happens. The shadows run.
Yeah. Well, they've seen what they themselves, the shadows, have seen now what has happened. That telepaths can pin them.
Yep.
And then they're vulnerable. So, yeah. They run, and it's probably a good idea from their point of view.
Yeah, this time it's their idea.
So we don't have walkabout here. We have runabout. Everybody's taken off.
And Lita freaks out because Kosh makes one of his other famous lines, "And so it begins."
Mm-hmm.
That's a goosebump scene.
It is.
Yep, very much so. And it's going to play a big role in the rest of the season.
Mm-hmm.
You had mentioned, Jim, with regard to Kaylin, take one to no one.
Yeah.
Well, Kaylin collapses, and Franklin finds her with the meds, and well, it turns out she's not an addict. The drugs are used to treat a terminal illness.
So he and we are wrong.
Yes.
Completely.
Mm.
And she's in stage. She's only got about 6 months left. Not only that, as to the real reason why she's in down below.
Singing yeah. horrible songs.
Well, she's there to bring some happiness.
I roll.
And she's doing it.
But she's doing it.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And apparently Franklin's got both enough influence and enough cash, even though he's out of a job, to make sure she is taken care of for however long she has left.
She probably doesn't require money for that. I seriously doubt that they would charge her.
Yeah.
Or him.
But yeah, she didn't realize just how much influence he had. So, we're actually going to spend more time with Franklin in the closing up of the episode, because we switch away from that and we're going to swing back. Lita passes on what she knows to Kosh too, and Sheridan may have a piece of Kosh in him.
Yeah, Lita might be well aware of this, because as Sheridan was helping her up off the deck, she made contact with him. And so
and she got all that flashback.
Yeah.
And then so it begins part at the end, pretty much seems to seal it for her.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the middle there, where she hears Kosh in Sheridan's presence.
Right.
So all the pieces come together, and it makes perfect sense that Sheridan may have a piece of Kosh in him.
Mm-hmm.
Which brings up the question, what are the Vorlons planning or likely to do about that?
Bide their time and wait till the opportunity presents itself to do whatever it is they want to do.
Yeah. It's like, okay, is it get the piece of Kosh back, set the piece of Kosh free? Is that just a mental fragment or mental remnant of some of his memories, or what, or is it actually Kosh in Sheridan? You know, so, you know, there's some big questions here.
Oh yeah. Or, you know, the other possibility is just leave it where it is, because it's helping Sheridan be who he is.
Mm-hmm. Though we do kind of get an idea about what Kosh meant now when he said, if he helped him back when they did the attack on the shadows, if he helps them, he won't be there for him when Sheridan goes to Khazad Dûm.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we get what that means now, at least.
Well, he won't be there physically.
True.
But he may be there.
Yep.
Oh yes.
Well, we close up with Bruce Banner walking away. Yeah, I'm sorry. Am I the only one who heard the theme from The Incredible Hulk running through my head when he walks off?
No. This is saying goodbye to the Incredible Sulk.
Yeah. Oh, I think that completely nails it. Down to the image through the looking glass. I mean, through the shot glass.
Mm-hmm.
Though there's an interesting element of all that. The whole idea of walkabout. The looking at Franklin through that glass. What? The way it breaks him up.
Multiple Franklins.
Franklin is fractured right now.
Oh, yeah.
So, Jim, Joe Straczynski's hypocrisy goes full bore. We get the full song on the closing credits.
I stopped the credits.
Am I the only one who actually liked that song?
Yes.
Oh, gosh. Well, this is not going to be the only time we have, shall I say, non-traditional closing music. Traditional being defined as the
B5
actual episode, you know, the B5 yeah. theme music. There's going to be a couple of more occurrences of that. One Jim may like or may not like. One, I don't know if he will. But there's going to be two more two more instances of that. One of them's not very far from here.
Okay. We'll figure it out.
But yeah, that wraps.
We'll burn that bridge after we cross it. Because I certainly did plenty of bridge burning this time. So,
Well, that covers Walkabout.
Yes, it does.
I got to say, after all the strife of the episodes running up to this one, and not that this was a lighthearted episode, I have to say I enjoyed this episode. It was nice. Oddly, it was a good break, even though, you know, as we tear the episode apart, you realize it was not without its own, you know, tense. What's the word I'm looking for? I mean, it was not a light episode, but.
No, though we did just come off of Zathras.
True.
But like you said, there was an intensity to that.
Yes.
I think I said way back that it's going to be a nonstop roller coaster in the second half. It's just going to be a continuing crescendo. And this episode definitely put out some of that idea.
No, I don't know about that, because the next episode.
Okay. Even crescendos have their.
Diminuendo.
There it is.
Can have the, yep.
Yes. No, we definitely have to get by. Gray 17 is missing the next episode that we're going to be looking at.
I think this was actually one of Joe Straczynski's least favorite episodes of the series.
Yeah.
It's one of the ones that he said, well, it looked good on paper.
Well, and not only that, but with Freddy Krueger on board, it got everybody to watch, you know, so.
Right. But I will state, I will say that the B story, the secondary story, really is good. And I'm just going to leave it at that so we have something to talk about.
Good.
So, any other final thoughts, gentlemen? This episode is, 318, at least as far as air order, if not production order. There's only 1, 2, 3, 4 episodes left in this season.
Yeah, we're getting real close to the end of this one.
Yeah.
But as to closing thoughts, no more musicals, please. And
you know you're going to be disappointed in that one already.
Well, I'll tell you what. After seeing the corpses reanimate and sing
on Fringe singing Candyman,
there's nothing can compare to that. So
oh god, no that truly actually that whole episode was fantastic, but the singing corpses, oh god. Yeah. That was one of the show's finer moments.
Yes. Well,
at least one of the lighter fighter moments.
Well, let's put a wrap on this one.
Let's do so. Oh, well, if no one else is going to ask, I'm going to ask. Boom today?
What do you think, JP?
I think we had some boom. At least if you're a shadow, you enjoyed some boom.
Oh, but yeah.
Did they really boom, or did they just kind of shrivel in on themselves?
Wilt.
Though? You were on the wrong end of the boom.
Right. The boom was where I prefer it to be, which is not on our side.
So did we, we should have boom tomorrow, right?
Yeah, unfortunately we will have boom tomorrow. I'm not exactly happy about how they have the boom, but we'll talk about that tomorrow.
Yes.
Because there's always boom tomorrow.
Always.
Good night, everyone.
Say good night, JP.
Good night, JP.
Good night, everyone.
Later.
Podcast terminated. Thank you for listening to the Babylon Project podcast. You can email Raul and Jim at thebabylonprojectpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook at the Babylon Project Podcast. On the internet, we are at babylonprojectpodcast.wordpress.com. To subscribe to the podcast, you can find us on iTunes, or you can subscribe to the RSS feed on the webpage.